Now, the hypothesis tests we've talked about so far primarily look at comparing it to a fixed value, so a known population value, or in some cases, a specification, or the observed versus expected values, which again is really looking at a fixed value of what the expected sequence should be. So there are hypothesis tests to make comparisons, and those are often much more interesting to do. So when we've got two vendors, for example, and we want to know which one provides a smaller variability, it would be a test of variance for two samples or for two vendors. It'd be a different kind of test. And there's a couple things we need to consider when we put together that style of test. Again, though, the structure is very similar to what we've seen before. Null, hypothesis, and alternative, test statistic and critical value in a comparison. Pretty straightforward in that regard. But sometimes we deal with proportions, just the percentages. And so if we're doing lot sampling, or we're looking at yield, or we're looking at scrap rates, things like that, or we're inspecting units and it's either a pass-fail or Bernoulli trialed kind of item, and then a p-test is appropriate. Now we have a condition here that we saw earlier, that if NP and N times 1 minus P is greater than, each one of those is both of them are greater than 5, then we can use a normal approximation. And like I mentioned before, I've seen some textbooks where they have a greater than 10 as the criteria, which is just a more stringent check to see if it works. But plenty of texts have used greater than 5, so I think that's an appropriate value. And if we don't use the normal approximation, you can use the binomial distribution directly. It's just a lot more tedious to do the calculations. So oftentimes we do this check to see if we can use the normal approximation and simplify the calculations for the test statistic. Now we're calculating a z-value, but it's based on parameters from the P or from the binomial distribution that we're going to, the P parameter and the 1 minus P, or some people call it the Q value. But NP times Q square root is the standard deviation. So if that's sigma or something like sigma, then X minus NP, which is the mean divided by sigma, is a z value. So we're normalizing this set of data, even though it's based on proportions. So we end up calculating a z statistic, which is pretty handy. We can use pretty much the same algorithm we used for the z test. It's just that we're using approximating the normal distribution under certain conditions with the, but based on the binomial distribution. So this comes in pretty handy. Everything else is the same. Now sometimes we have data that's paired, and so we're looking at, say, left and right shoes that are have different soles on them. So we're testing two different treatments for soles, sole material, but we're going to put the pairs of shoes, some on the left and some on the right, on different people who have different weights, different gaits, different terrain they walk over. And it allows us to evaluate those differences between the two soles when they're getting similar treatment. Now, another way to look at paired data is that I take a prepared sample that's exactly the same, say, material properties or coatings or painting, but then I split the sample and put one of it in one stress condition and another in a different stress condition. And then I'm comparing those results, looking for the differences in their reaction to different stresses. But in either case, there's some connection between the pair of samples that we're comparing. And that's where the X1 minus X2 come together, is that depends on how we think through what the connection is between those two individual samples. And because essentially what we're doing is calculating the difference. And so that average difference divided by that average standard deviation of those differences then gives us basically a t-test. And so everything else works out just like a regular old t-test. And we're comparing the difference between two means, but it's essentially a t-test. And so you could use two different samples and compare them this way, but you have to be sure that your standard deviations are the same for that to work. But better is to have those conditions where it's actually paired data. It's either getting similar treatments or stresses applied to them or experimentation, or they are the same material as close as you can get, and you're comparing them in different stresses. But what happens when you have two sets of data and they do have different variances, or they have different variances? So in this particular case, the standard deviation term is something, S sub P, we call that pooled, a pooled standard deviation. So basically, it's a weighted average of the standard deviation. And so we're comparing two different sets of data, and we're going to combine the standard deviations in a weighted average kind of sense. But they're two estimates, so we're going to use a t-test, but we're assuming that the two standard deviations are similar enough, right? Either they're the same, or they're similar enough that we can pull the data together to get a better estimate of the standard deviation. Now, the pooled term there is a bit of a bear to calculate by hand, but it certainly can be done. Degrees of freedom in this case, though, is relatively straightforward. On the other hand, if we're comparing two means of our data, and we know that the variances are not the same, maybe we did a variance test using the chi-squared hypothesis test and found that the variances really are different. Well, again, we need to calculate a test statistic, but this time we're going to use the standard deviation or the variance term from the first sample and the second one from the second sample and run the test statistic out. But to go into the t-table, the degrees of freedom calculation, although it looks complicated, it's more of a bookkeeping exercise to make sure you do all the calculations correctly. So one of the processes is to make sure that your standard deviations are the same first. And you may need to do a test for variances, and that's appropriate. If they're show that there's no significant difference of those, then use one of the other tests and you can avoid this complicated looking degrees of freedom calculation. But we do make the assumption when we run a t-test or a z-test or any of those other tests that the variation with the two samples is we're drawing from the same population, that we have equal variances. Now, that's not always true, and it's worth testing it to make sure. Now, it's especially worth testing when you're drawing samples, say, from two vendors. Make sure that your comparison of the means is fair by treating the variance terms correctly. Now, if I've got two different, like these two vendors, the appropriate test there is called the F test. And here the test statistic is really simple. It's really looking at the ratio of the two variances. So vendor one and vendor two, and put a ratio of their variances. Now it's customary to put the larger variance in the numerator. And it allows us then to use the upper tail of the F distribution as our critical value. Now if the difference is too great, will be above that critical value for some given confidence. Degrees of freedom is, I didn't put in here, but it's the number of samples in one. So n sub 1 minus 1, and I should probably draw it. Oops, I actually have to turn the pen on. Sorry about that. And is it plus or times each other? Let me do a quick check. Yeah. Let's cross that out. There's degrees of freedom one and degrees of freedom two. You need 2 degrees of freedom to enter the F table. That's why I knew something wasn't right there. N1 minus one, N2 minus one. There we go. So cross that part out. All right. Now, that's the range on hypothesis testing. It is a handful of different tools there for you to compare variances or means or comparing values to a standard or to a known set of values. And also the observed versus expected test, which is pretty handy beyond the traditional comparison of a hypothesis test. So the best way to learn this is to go compare things. Go find data from 2 vendors or from 2 change in your process or whatever. Work through actually running some hypothesis tests. If you were fortunate like I was, you work for somebody that expected you to do an experiment every day. But if you don't have that, work the examples and find your own data and run some of these tests. All right. If you've got questions or if anything's not clear, please let me know. I'm always looking for ways to improve the course, but more importantly, to help you master the data. So next, we're going to move into another whole module, and this is the section 3 of the body of knowledge on reliability and design and development.